case this morning is 14-1432, Invista North America v. M&G Polymers. Mr. Kenzo?
Yes.
You're ready.
Yes, may it please the Court. This is a case about plastic bottles, and in particular, the 216 patent is directed to a composition of very specific ingredients. And my comments today are going to be focused on one of those ingredients, the claimed copolyester comprising a metal sulfonate salt. Although M&G has raised a number of issues in its brief, my focus today is going to be on the claim construction for copolyester comprising term, and then the impact of the proper construction of that single term on M&G's non-infringement position. The Delaware Court made an error of law when it construed the copolyester comprising term to mean, quote, a copolyester including, but not limited to, a metal sulfonate salt. The Court chose to ignore the patentee's own disclaimer made during prosecution, a disclaimer that was simple, unambiguous, and supported by the specification's disclosure of both a polymerization and blending of ingredients. In a 112 rejection of indefiniteness, the examiner expressed her confusion by asking a very simple yes-no question. Was the metal sulfonate salt attached or not attached to the copolyester? And it really doesn't get any more simple than that. In direct response, Invista's in-house patent counsel did two very important things. First, the in-house counsel amended the word containing to the word comprising, thus differentiating the 216 patent from the priority 159 patent. And second, in-house patent counsel told the examiner, quote, for the record, the metal sulfonate salt is not attached to the copolyester. It was a simple answer to a simple question.
If that was just flat out wrong, though,
no.
It's not a disclaimer, is it?
Sure, Your Honor, because if the question was going to the fact of the structural relationship between the metal sulfonate salt and the copolyester.
But if the copolyester really is attached, and the specifications show that it's attached, that's how it operates when you mix this salt with the copolyester, the fact that a patent attorney may have said something during the prosecution that just made no sense can't be used as estoppel, can it?
Well, certainly, Your Honor. First off, I would argue that there are a couple different embodiments disclosed in the 216 patent. You have the polymerization where the metal sulfonate salt is incorporated into the backbone of the copolyester chain. But the specification also very clearly talks about blending in the abstract, the written description, as well as some of the test runs. And so the 159 priority patent that uses the copolyester containing a metal sulfonate salt, every place where they talk about containing in the patent, it's in the relationship of the polymerization.
So you think there's places in the specification that show this copolyester mixing with the sulfonate, I don't have the right words, but you know what I'm talking about.
Correct.
Where they're mixed but stay separate, they don't chemically react?
Correct, Your Honor.
Is that possible?
It is. When you look at the test runs, Your Honor, what they did, the cobalt salt was part of a master batch. What that master batch is it's a second copolyester. The claim limitation does not specify which copolyester the metal sulfonate salt is not attached to. So in the test runs 5-8, as well as the 22-24, there are two copolyesters. So the metal sulfonate salt is attached to one, but not attached to the other. And that is very clear in here. And so in that regard, the claim limitation is met, because there's no distinction in there that the metal sulfonate salt has to be attached to a very particular copolyester. It just has to be not attached to another copolyester. And why this is important is because from the...
The chemistry is hard for me.
Sure.
But you are saying that the metal sulfonate salt does attach to some copolyester, just not all of them?
Correct. In the 216 patent, it is attached. You have some resins S1 and S2, and the metal sulfonate salt is attached, incorporated into the backbone of those copolyesters. However, when you look at test runs 5 through 8, there's another resin, A. So the metal sulfonate salt is not attached to A. In test runs 22 through 24, you have another copolyester that's introduced with the cobalt master batch. So the metal sulfonate salt that's attached to S2 in those runs is not attached to the copolyester introduced with the cobalt master batch. And when you look at the patent itself, the abstract talks about a blending. And then when you also talk about, on column 5, rows 40 through 44, as well as lines 54 to 55, they talk about blending components. It would be very clear to someone of ordinary skill in the art to know that blending is a mixing without the attachment, without the polymerization. And then also, when they talk about the polymerization, that it would be incorporated into the backbone. So, continuing on with the with this important disclaimer, one of the other things is what this satisfies is the policy providing public notice as to what the scope of the patent is. The plaintiffs are asking that this court ignore that statement, ignore that the patent teaches blending, ignore that you had a very specific 13-word disclaimer, not to mention an amendment that went with it. I mean, in response to that question, it's a very direct question, they amended a word, and they made a statement. And to now take that away and to violate the public policy notice, you know, they're looking for a do-over. And that is just runs afoul of the notice argument. The other important thing is to look at this patent with respect to the priority patent, the 159 patent. You had the claim term there is copolyester containing a metal sulfonate salt. And when the 216 patent was filed, it was filed with the exact same claim term. And he has the exact same patent examiner. But in this case, the examiner goes, well, wait a minute. What is it? Is it attached or not attached? So they amended the word containing to comprising, and then they made that very clear 13-word statement. So to now construe the 216 to be the same as its parent, 159, that just runs afoul of what did the amendment mean and what did the statement mean? It would be meaningless, quite actually. And so what happens is, the district court construed these two claim terms in the two different patents the exact same way. Now, plaintiffs have argued that the word comprising in patent law, we all know, very open-ended term, you know, and they cite the Mars v. Heinz, and even the district court judge cited Mars v. Heinz. But when you look at Mars, the difference there is that the word containing is not the transitional phrase. It's in the body. It was filed with that word. It stayed that word. There was no amendment to change it. There was nothing in the record for this court to deviate from the ordinary and customary meaning of the word containing. That's not this case. Our case is we had an amendment, and we had a statement made, and therefore there has to be a reason for that, and that gives the reason to deviate from the ordinary and customary meaning of the word comprising. Plaintiffs also argue that the 216 patent demonstrates the polymerization and the open-endedness of the word containing. And they've cited to column 4 and column 8. But when you look at these sites in the patent, it's very specific and very express where the word containing is used only with the polymerization embodiment. So column 4, line 67 to column 5, line 9, it references a copolyester containing a metal sulfonate salt group, and it talks about polymerization. Column 8, lines 39 to 43, talk about a series of copolyesters were made containing various amounts of SIPA, which is the metal sulfonate salt. So again, the containing word is used with polymerization. When they made the change from containing to comprising, in response to the examiner's question. It had to mean something, and it meant the alternative embodiments that are taught in the 216 patent, which is the blending. For the foregoing reasons, the proper claim construction of the term copolyester comprising a metal sulfonate salt requires that the metal sulfonate salt be not attached to the copolyester. And for this construction, M&G's accused product, the Polyprotect product, does not infringe the 216 patent. This is because the record is void of any evidence of Polyprotect having a metal sulfonate salt that is not attached to a copolyester. Looking at what the experts opined on this, M&G's expert, Dr. Moore, stated in his report that the Polyprotect is manufactured using polymerization, and thus the metal sulfonate salt is attached to copolyester. There's no other copolyester or polyester in Polyprotect. There's the one and only. And this is carried through to his opinion on non-infringement. Regarding plaintiff's expert, Dr. Turner, he also opined that polymerization was used in the manufacturing of the Polyprotect product. His report, though, is void of any discussion of what happens in the proper claim construction or under defendant's claim construction, which is the non-attached. So he had a section, actually, paragraphs 312 and 313 in his report, that were supposed to be dedicated to the non-attached discussion. Well, unfortunately, it appears he had a cut and paste error taken from the 159 section to the 216. And so there's nothing in his report. This was brought out at his deposition. He never corrected it, never submitted a supplemental report, never filed a declaration. There's nothing in the record that under the proper construction of the metal sulfonate salt being not attached to the copolyester, that there would be a finding of infringement. So unless you have any questions, I'd like to thank you, and I'll save my time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. Obviously, I'll focus on the argument raised by the appellant. And what you've heard today is largely a new argument with respect to this claim construction. It is true, of course, that they argued for not attached below, but they focused solely on that disclaimer, and they never argued that the specification, in fact, taught alternatives in which it was not attached. In fact, all parties agreed at the district court that it is attached to the aromatic nucleus, which is in turn copolymerized into the backbone of the copolyester. And that's in the court's opinion, and it's throughout the record. The first time this argument appears, that is that there is another embodiment in which it is not attached, is in their reply brief here in this court. For that reason, it should not be considered at all, but it's also wrong, and I'll address why it's wrong. First of all, the construction that they've advocated of not attached is nonsensical. It violates multiple fundamental tenets of claim construction, including reading out all the embodiments, and I'll address their specific argument that there are embodiments that are not read out. It's nonsensical because it ignores the context of the file history as a whole, and when the file history as a whole is reviewed, there is not only one reasonable interpretation of this. Judge Robinson did a very careful analysis and found that there was another reasonable interpretation, in fact, the one that all the parties agreed on, that it was attached indirectly through the attachment to the aromatic nucleus of the sulfo monomer. So this is not a Chef American case where there was susceptible to only one reasonable interpretation, which may otherwise seem
out of
context.
Could you talk about this mixing stuff? I'm not sure I followed your friend's arguments completely,
yes.
But to the extent I did, it sounded like she was saying that there's some polyesters that don't have anything attached and that there's some polyesters that do have the sulfonate attached.
That's the new argument first raised in the reply brief here, and let me address
it. Is it true that there are alternative messages in the spec that talk about that kind of blending?
We do not believe that's true, Your Honor, and let me address that specifically. first of all, let me reiterate, this is the opposite of what they argued below. They argued below that the metal sulfonate salt is attached and that the specification only teaches attached. So the argument they're now making is new. the specific argument that Ms. D'Ortenzo has raised today is with respect primarily to column 5 of the specification. And also she mentioned this example of S1, examples 1 and 5. So let me address those particularly. With respect to examples 1 and 5, and this is maybe the point on which Your Honor was somewhat confused, Mr. Tenzo, I think, admitted, and they have to admit, that there is a copolyester attached to a metal sulfonate salt in those examples. What they say is there's another copolyester as, or polyester as well. That's irrelevant. The claim requires that there be a copolyester containing a metal sulfonate salt, and it does, and it's attached, and there's no dispute about that. So, claims 1 and 5, or examples 1 and 5, I'm sorry.
Well, does it require all the copolyesters to have the sulfonate salt attached?
I don't believe the claims require that. I don't believe that's an argument that was ever made before.
Does it require some copolyesters not to have a sulfonate attached?
It doesn't require that either. The point, I think, with respect to those examples and why they're not relevant is they all show a copolyester that have the metal sulfonate salt attached, as the claim requires, and they have none that disclose a metal sulfonate salt that's not attached to a copolyester. So there is no embodiment to those examples that shows that it's not attached to the copolyester. So what's their other new argument? It's column 5, and they say that column 5 somehow teaches that there can be some physical mixing that doesn't involve a copolymerization in which there would be attachment of the metal sulfonate salt. The fundamental problem with their argument with Claim 5 is it ignores, what they argued below and what the court construed below with respect to what is an ionic compatibilizer. That's one of the components that's discussed at Column 5, and we're really talking about the section of the patent that is addressing, frankly, processing parameters, different ways that you can put these components together. But the very critical point on this attachment issue is does that teach that the metal sulfonate salt is not attached in some examples or in that embodiment? The answer is no, and because the components that are being referenced there include the ionic compatibilizer. Well, the ionic compatibilizer, as a starting material, already has the metal sulfonate salt copolymerized in. How do we know that? We know that from column 4, lines 62 through 63. We know it because they argued below that's what the ionic compatibilizer is and that it contains the metal sulfonate salt. And that's what the court found below on claim construction as to what the ionic compatibilizer is. Now, granted, it was in the context of the 159 patent, but it's an identical specification, and they argued that specification teaches that the ionic compatibilizer includes the metal sulfonate salt. So when we get to column 5 and it says you can combine these things, the ionic compatibilizer with the nylon and the cobalt salt, and you can physically mix them and you can put them in the extruder in different ways and you can make master batches in one or the other, it has nothing to do with the attachment of the metal sulfonate salt because that's already happened. That's one of the starting components in column 5. So there's no support in column 5 for this notion that it teaches embodiments that are not attached. And we could walk through that in more detail, but the point of column 5 is simply that you can once you have those ingredients, including the ionic compatibilizer with the metal sulfonate salt in it, you can put them together in a lot of different ways and use your processing equipment as you choose to use it. To the extent they now want to argue that the abstract doesn't teach that the metal sulfonate salt can be attached, that's a new argument. It's inconsistent with what was argued below. It's inconsistent with the construction that the court entered below with respect to ionic compatibilizer. It's not a separate, the metal sulfonate salt is not separate from the ionic compatibilizer under the record in this case and the arguments made below. And certainly, read as a whole, as counsel argued below, it includes and contains the metal sulfonate salt. On this issue, Your Honors, I'm not sure that there's anything new. There was, I'll address it very briefly because there was another new argument raised for the first time on this claim construction issue in their reply brief, and that was as Judge Robinson found when you look at her opinion, there was another reasonable interpretation of what this statement meant about it's not attached, and she found it had to mean not directly attached, because everybody agreed that it's attached to the aromatic nucleus, which is in turn copolymerized into the backbone. And she reasoned that in part because in the same response to office action, applicants had pointed out in connection with Claim 9 that it's attached to the aromatic nucleus. And so reading that as a whole, she essentially agreed that this was a case in which he had to mean that it's attached indirectly to the aromatic nucleus, since everybody agrees that's what happens. Nobody was saying below that it's not attached through the aromatic nucleus and then bind in. So now they come up on their reply brief on appeal, and for the first time, they want to argue that this whole sulfa monomer can be free-floating. And that is a totally new, waived, and shouldn't be considered, but it's also nonsensical. It's wrong for the same reason that Judge Robinson found in her claim construction opinion at page 18, and that's A33 in the appendix. It's the same reason that the free-floating metal sulfonate salt was wrong. Nonsensical and internally inconsistent. The metal sulfonate salt cannot be attached to the monomer link of the copolyester yet be entirely separate from the copolyester at the same time. And she went on in a footnote to say, even if the construction is directed to requiring the sulfa monomer to be free-floating in the composition, that result would be contrary to the teachings of the specification. So this argument has no support in the record, and it certainly doesn't diminish from Judge Robinson's finding that the reasonable interpretation of that office action was that the applicant was simply distinguishing between a direct attachment and an indirect attachment. With respect to comprising and containing, who knows what was in the applicant's mind, but both are open-ended terms. It certainly was not a limiting amendment in the sense of it was not in response to some prior art argument. It was perhaps to try to address this direct-indirect. We don't know. We don't have a mind reader on that. But it certainly wasn't limiting. He said it comprises, that's a broad, open-ended term, and then went on to explain that it's attached through the aromatic nucleus. So unless your owners have questions on those points, I don't think I have anything else on that argument. And if there are any other arguments that the court would like to hear from me on, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you.
Thank you. With respect to the fact that there's a thought that any of these arguments are new, they are not new. The one thing that we have been clear on from day one, from M&G's point of view, is that the proper claim construction for this term requires the metal sulfonate salt to be not attached from the copolyester.
Well, just because you've been clear on that doesn't mean that you didn't raise new arguments in the reply brief. No one's disputing that that was an issue. The question is what you're relying on to support that argument, right?
Correct, Your Honor. Now, under Harris Court v. Erickson, 417 F3rd 1241, that it is proper to clarify and defend the original claim construction position. And then in Interactive Gifts at 256 F3rd 1323, it is proper to put forth clarifying arguments in the appeal that might not have been in below. But that being said, I would also argue that it was raised. In footnote 12 of the court's claim construction brief on A33, this is where the judge did raise the fact that the sulfa monomer could be free-floating in the composition. Responding to the judge's position in that it was looked at below, the abstract of the patent clearly talks about the metal sulfonate salt could possibly be an ionic compatibilizer, and it could be blended. And when you look at the abstract, which I don't believe that the court did in writing her claim construction order, that would talk about free-floating, and that would be free-floating metal sulfonate salt in the resin. So with respect to Claim 9, on page 9 of our reply brief, we're responding to the argument, and Claim 9 and Claim 1 are two different points of attachment, and we have a figure on that page. And what you see is that the metal sulfonate salt is attached to the aromatic ring. Claim 9 only talks about an aromatic ring. Claim 1 talks about the metal sulfonate salt being part of or incorporated into, attached to the copolyester. So it is totally possible that the two claims, that they can reconcile with each other. Because in Claim 9...
Claim 9 depends on Claim 1, so it includes all of the limitations that are present in Claim 1, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the way it would work then, to reconcile that both of those survive just fine, is that your metal sulfonate salt is attached to an aromatic ring over here, maybe attached to copolyester 1, but that metal sulfonate salt is not attached to the copolyester in a plan that would be required for Claim 1. So it's two separate components, basically, is the way to look at it.
I'm not following that. If there's a copolyester with this sulfonate attached, that's what the claim construction requires. And that's what the specification requires. The fact that there may be copolyesters without a sulfonate attached seems irrelevant to me.
But I would argue, Your Honor, that it's not irrelevant. When you look at column 5...
Is there any enablement in the specification that has a copolyester that has all copolyesters with no sulfonates attached?
The only embodiment would be described in the abstract. There are no test runs and no examples.
So everything else in the specification, at least some of the copolyesters, if not all of them, have a sulfonate attached?
Other than the abstract, correct, Your Honor. What you'd have is in the abstract, talks about the metal sulfonate salt would be freestanding, so you could have one copolyester and metal sulfonate salt, and the two shall never meet. That's the abstract. When you look at column 5 and you look at the test runs, they talk about blending, and in those embodiments, you would have, say, two copolyesters, one with metal sulfonate salt and one not.
How would you have, once you mix these things together, a batch where the metal sulfonates all stay unattached from the copolyester? Wouldn't they just naturally, at least some of them, attach to the polyester when you blend it chemically?
It would depend on the process, Your Honor. From what I understand about the chemical process, depending on where in the process you introduce things under the right conditions, you would have polymerization or not. If you don't do it with the heat, with the right antimonies to be a catalyst and facilitate that polymerization, and you just cold mix it, whatever.
Do any of the specifications have a process like that at all?
Well, it does talk about blending, Your Honor, and it talks about the blending with a cobalt, the cobalt salt being part of a master batch. And I see my time is up.
Your time is up.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank both parties for the cases submitted.